And draw back. The blitz is on for Dallas. The Steelers pick it up. Lynn Swann out there. Caught it! What a catch by Lynn Swann.
Second and 18. Dallas at its own 17. Prescott under center. Play action, boots to the right. Screen right, little room, 20-yard line. Zeke, a move to the 30. Zeke the sideline. Zeke to the Steelers 30. 20 and 10 and touchdown. And how about that? How about 83 yards from Prescott to Elliott?
And 10. Looking, and still has it. Still fakes it. All kinds of time, and now open is Miller, and he goes in for the touchdown.
And watch the pump fake. This is why you rush three against him, so you can give one of these pass rushers time to get there. And the defense, when it has to stay on the field that long, Jim, it's going to break down.
Blitz.
Trailing 10-7 in the third quarter, the Steelers missed a field goal. When Cowboys safety Cliff Harris taunted kicker Roy Girella,
oh yeah,
Lambert responded.
I thought that was right on time, and I'm glad Lambert did that.
I think the message sent was thunderous. No one's going to intimidate any of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And if you don't understand that, we're going to show you that. It helped further define what Pittsburgh Steeler football Jack Lambert is all about. It was the right thing to do.
Oh, man! Forget about everything else. We got a man named Donnie Football here for the whole show. It's a Donnie Football Friday. Donnie, very briefly, how are you? I trust you're doing well.
I'm great, Joe. I'm jazzed up. It seems like you're doing the same.
Oh, am I jazzed up? I'm going to tell you right now. Limits, how are you? You guys were classmates. Everybody good?
What a way to get going, huh? Good start to a Friday.
And you did it. You put that together. And I would say if you asked 10,000 Steeler fans of a certain age, in other words, ones who have been watching since the 70s, for their all-time favorite Steeler moment, I don't know that the majority would say the Immaculate Reception. Or carrying Chuck Knoll off the field in 74 when they won their first Super Bowl. Or James Harrison's interception or Ben's pass. I think a decent majority would say the time Jack Lambert picked up Cliff Harris and tossed him to the turf like a little rag doll. So let me tell you what we're not talking about, Donnie, on our first Donnie Football Friday. We're not talking about Devontae Adams, at least not off the top. I'm speaking for myself here. And possibly for Limits, yes. We've spent the week a little bit distracted with side issues. Devontae Adams, we're not going to talk about Shelty's job security or Terry Francona or Ben Charrington or Najee Harris's role this week or who the hell's going to back him up. We're not going to talk about a delusional Russell Wilson, I think, still believing he's the starter around here. We're not going to talk about Limits and I getting 50,000 views on our visit to the Pitt volleyball facility.
How about that?
Just on X, not even counting
Instagram. Which is absolutely incredible. We're not going to talk about the fact that the IUP rugby team has contacted us to come out and play rugby with them, or that a theater company has contacted our boss about me singing on stage. None of that like this.
I've done everything for Mosey. He's done nothing for me.
We're not going to talk about any of that. It's Steelers, Cowboys. What are we doing? What have I been doing all week? I must have lost my mind. These two teams have only played, I believe, 36 times in 60 plus years. They hardly ever play, but every time they do, something happens. This was the franchise that the Steelers stepped on and catapulted themselves off of to become legendary in the 1970s. That whole dynasty, I think six or seven plays that are most memorable from the 70s came in two games against the Cowboys. Lynn Swann, I just mentioned Lambert, Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris, Rocky Blyer on the cover of Sports Illustrated, Jackie Smith as the sickest man in America. That's not all. Cordell Stewart's first start was against the Cowboys. Big Ben's first comeback was against the Cowboys. Deshae Townsend intercepting cocky Tony Romo for a touchdown was one of the great moments and then called Heinz Field history. I could go on here. We just did the play from Ben to Heath Miller, one of the first great plays of Ben's career. Cowboys 35, Steelers 30, one of the great games at Heinz Field. The rivalry is so great, Donnie, that even some of the most iconic plays in Steelers history from this rivalry are forgotten, like Ben's fake spike to Antonio Brown. We don't even talk about that. It's Cowboys and Steelers on Sunday night in primetime. I don't care that both franchises have slipped. You couldn't choose a more iconic matchup in the NFL. I'll give you any two teams, you put them together. Nothing's more iconic from legacy, from brand, from history, from everything than Steelers-Cowboys. The silver, blue, and white against the black and gold. Those uniforms are going to pop off the screen. This is iconic every time they play. This is Lakers-Celtics. Hello, Donnie.
Joe, I had a professor in college, somebody who you have a working relationship with or used to have a working relationship with, and he used to talk about the strength of brands in sports with teams. And he would always tell us, I took a couple of his sports information classes, he would always say teams that change their logos and their uniforms every couple of years, they have an identity crisis. The way you can find the strongest teams, the strongest franchises in sports.
Yes.
Those ones that never change their uniforms. The Yankees, the Packers, and maybe the two most iconic in football, the Steelers and the Cowboys.
I love that,
I mean,
idea.
That's what this is. Like, everybody knows when they see those logos who the teams are.
Even for you guys of a younger generation, you can feel that this is like two iconic franchises clashing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I never really got to witness them. I know that Austin never got to witness them play in a Super Bowl. I was, I think, 3 months old when they played Super Bowl 30. But there has not been a richer Super Bowl matchup than Steelers-Cowboys. They have met three times, the Steelers winning two of the three. And it seems like each game had its own layer of something spectacular that happened. Now, maybe not so much on the Steelers' end in 95 in the Super Bowl 30 matchup, but just the, which is why I love your comparison to the Celtics and the Lakers, because you think of great rivalries in sports, you think of great rivalries on, you know, for teams that are in the same division, in the same conference, matchups that we do see pretty often. This has been a strong one for years, and they don't play all that often. They only really match up every 4 years, and it seems like every time they do, it is something special. Even in the COVID season when the Steelers were undefeated, the Cowboys looked like the first team that were going to knock them off. And
who was the Cowboys quarterback that day?
Wasn't it Cooper Rush? Is that who it was?
I think he's
still there. I think he's.
Was it him that day?
I believe so.
I'm going to pull it up. I'm pretty sure Cooper Rush was there. No, Garrett Gilbert.
That's who it was.
Garrett Gilbert.
And they almost upset them.
Yes. So every time these two teams play, it is something special. And there are iconic players left and right. We were texting this morning about all-time teams, if you combine both of these, just Hall of Famers and legends of the game left and right. That's how strong Steelers-Cowboys is. It's also the first time. This is the first time in the series history they are playing Sunday Night Football.
Really?
Yes.
All you have to know, 2 years ago, the Cowboys who have done nothing but win five wild card games since they beat the Steelers in that Super Bowl. They haven't even gone to a conference championship. 95 minus this is what? 30 years almost?
Yeah.
They're, at least in this piece I read from 2 years ago, the most financially impactful, the biggest brand in all of sports worldwide, the biggest global brand, which is why, and we're watching ESPN right up here, love it or hate it, by the way, it's like Notre Dame, right? I mean, you will watch any of these shows and it could be like May 6th and the lead topic is Dak Prescott's future. because they know eyes are on the Cowboys all the time, no matter what. And then the Steelers, I mean, that speaks for itself. While they have slipped, clearly, I think, as a team that everybody looks to, you know, as a big winner, things like that, they weren't even one of the most 10-watch teams in the NFL last year, by the way, average size. They're still an unbelievable brand, and there's nothing, I don't think, in all of American sports like Steeler Nation, where they go and commandeer other stadiums. It's obviously a huge brand with legacy.
The Steelers and the Cowboys are like catnip to the big talking head networks. Like, think about the topics you mentioned. Dak Prescott in the middle of May is a big topic. How many days could you turn on ESPN in the offseason and one of their lead topics was Justin Fields versus Russell Wilson?
Almost every.
Pretty much every day. Pretty much every day on either ESPN or Fox or, I don't know, maybe one of the other smaller networks out there. But they just know that there is such a strong following for both of those teams. Like, I don't think overall there are two stronger fan bases. I mean, it goes back to, well, the Cowboys are America's team, but they asked the Pittsburgh Steelers first.
And the
Chiefs said, no thanks. We're Pittsburgh's team.
Yeah,
that whole story.
I'll give you guys and anybody else the choice. You get to pick an iconic matchup in the NFL. And I'm not saying it would be the most watched. Like, I don't know that tonight or Sunday night will be the most watched game of the year. Like, for right now, I think if you had, say, Chiefs-Niners on the air, that might be the most watched game. I'm talking about all time. And even today, if you could pick a matchup with two bigger branded, better legacy teams than this, two of the flagship franchises in the history of the league, like, pick a matchup that would outdo this for that to be drenched in the kind of history that these two are. And they're still, by the way, they're still good enough to be relevant. You know what I mean? Like, if they turn into the Arizona Cardinals for 5 years, forget it. But the Cowboys have been 12-4 the last 3 years and playing in big playoff games, things like that. And the Steelers, as we know, are always in it. So they're always relevant.
Yeah, well, they both managed to be good, but not great.
I think the infrequency of the matchup, because it's cross-conference, AFC, NFC, it's not like a big divisional matchup that is a huge rivalry like Red Sox-Yankees is in baseball.
Yeah.
That's what gives it that lore of Lakers-Celtics, cross the coast, cross conferences. That's what Steelers Cowboys is, and the biggest. It's basically the same exact rivalry, but in football, that it is in the NBA.
Who are the biggest flagship franchises in the league? The most iconic franchises? We talked before the show when Dr. Crowley was in here, all geared up for another West Virginia battle, isn't he? You like that jersey he wears?
He has to watch it at a wedding this weekend.
Does he?
He's going to pull it up on his phone.
Oh, you know he will, right? He's going to be non-participatory at that wedding.
I can't be honest. I can't lie and say that I haven't done it before.
He's going to be far away from the... He's going to be like Pitsnoggle way out at the three-point line at this wedding. We talked before the show, like, when you want to list the most historic, legendary, iconic franchises, the Patriots are tied with the Steelers for most Super Bowls, but I don't think of the Patriots like that. They're not the Yankees or Celtics. They were crappy, mostly, for a long time, their whole history, mostly. Then they became this incredible dynasty, and now they're back to what they were. So to me, they're not one of the flagship franchises. They're not. You?
Yeah, I don't hold them in the same vein, because they had some good years with Drew Bledsoe in the 90s, and then obviously the iconic run with Brady, but they pretty much sucked back in the day, and they suck now. The only other matchup...
Yes.
The only other matchup, Joe, that even comes to mind here that is fitting the same criteria, and I still don't think it comes... close to what Cowboys Steelers is Chiefs Packers. That's the only one I can think of where they have been two very historied franchises, multiple championships, multiple Super Bowls, especially the Chiefs recently, and both teams now, if they played in a game on Sunday Night Football, it would be a pretty big deal.
And it's funny you mention that, because the story this year is that the Chiefs have passed the Cowboys as the most watched team in the league, meaning, you know, the Chiefs are on a Monday night against whoever. They're getting a larger average audience than anybody. Are they an iconic franchise? Like, let's list the five in any order. Steelers, Cowboys, you mentioned Packers. That's obvious.
Yeah.
Who else? Giants? Are they in that? Not the Bears. No, they stunk for too long. How about the 49ers? I think they are.
I would probably go Chiefs and 49ers, and I think the Bears are close given the history. But, I mean, obviously,
Giants,
they haven't done much. Giants are close.
They're close.
Yeah. I mean, plus they have the little feather in the cap of being the only team to stop the 07 Patriots.
I think
that certainly helps.
Yeah. I think the three above the fray, tell me if I'm wrong, Limitless Wonder, is Cowboys, Steelers, and Packers.
I'd agree. Just because of Lombardi, the very beginning of the Super Bowl era, Dallas and America's team, and the Steelers, the most Super Bowls up until New England tied them. The Bears, it's tough because the Bears is so historic, but they've been so irrelevant for the last 30 plus years.
Well, a lot of the years before that too, before 85.
Exactly.
You have to go way back to Dick Butkus. Like, they never won, but they are a legendary franchise. I will give
one
them
of the
that.
Oldest too.
Absolutely.
Legendary franchises are ones that transcend generations. And I think you put the Giants in that category as the next tier.
And stay relevant in every generation.
Yes.
We know what this looks like. This is the Montreal Canadiens. It's the Yankees. It's the Celtics. It's the Lakers. I put the Steelers and the Cowboys and the Packers, I think, in that category. Right?
Yeah. And it's pretty indisputable for me that it's those three. Now, you can rank them maybe however you may want to, Packers, Cowboys, Steelers. I don't think it is a question that they are the three strongest brands in NFL history.
Yeah, and you mentioned maybe, was it Super Bowl 30 was when the Cowboys got them back. Even that game is unbelievably memorable for bad reasons, sure, if you live here, but also for great like memorable things happened in that game. Rod Woodson coming back from a season-long ACL. They reserved a spot for him. Him being on the field in that game. The Steelers come and going head-to-head with Michael Irvin, by the way, and stopping him on a pass. Like, you always remember that play. So it's also the nature of this rivalry. And like I said, there's a million memorable moments that nobody talks about anymore that happened, even in losses, and then Cowher's surprise onside.
I was going to say the onside kick.
In that game.
Did you also know the Steelers held that Dallas offense, which had one of the best quarterback, running back, receiver trios probably in league history?
Yes.
Aikman, Smith, and Irvin.
Yes.
They only had 254 yards of offense.
I do.
The Steelers had 310.
I do. They started fast. They grabbed a big lead, and then LaVon Kirkland said, "No more of this." He was a monster in that game.
Emmett Smith, 2.7 yards per carry.
Yeah. I thought, and I still remember that game so vividly, I thought the Steelers were going to win. I thought they were going to win. They had the ball, chance to go ahead, and then it happened. Larry freaking Brown. Then it happened. So, Donnie, we have all kinds of choices off the top, and I'm very excited today. And I know Limits is as well for the first, hopefully of many, Donnie Football Fridays. This is awesome. I know you have a long day of football, but that's why God made Donnie Football.
What else is
he going to do on a Friday?
It doesn't feel like work when you're having fun, Joe.
Exactly.
Is that an old Ron line? He may have used that once or twice.
Yeah, I think he did. Funny you say that. I heard from Ron this morning.
No way.
Yes, I did. Yes,
well, you're
I did.
Burying the lead here.
I know. Ron.
Hey, Joe, it's me. You know where I'll be around 2:30.
I remember all those Super Bowls, Niall O'Donnell with the interceptions, Larry Braun. But very nicely, Ron weighed in this morning to wish my daughter a happy 16th birthday. She's 16.
Oh, happy birthday.
Man. Can you believe that?
Happy
10
birthday.
Minutes ago, she was the size of a little squirrel taking naps on my chest. Now she's all grown up.
Going out for that learner's permit.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, we are. And then I discover there's a doctor's section of the learner permit.
What?
Yes.
There is?
Yes. Has she ever had this? It has to be signed by the doctor. So I go over there this morning. I say, she obviously hasn't had these. You've been seeing her since she was born. Can you just fill this in? No, she has to come in for an appointment. So now I'm the slug who had to say, we can't go get your permit today because of this glitch. What is happening here?
I don't remember that back when,
neither
I had to
do I.
It.
Well, why? Nope. Why does that have to happen? There's a section on the thing that the doctor, their healthcare provider, has to fill in.
I don't know. I just walked in and sit down at a computer and take a little
quiz.
Right,
that's what I thought. Yeah, I thought about forging it, but then I thought better of that, Donnie. Why don't we do what we did before the show while we're doing history here? And any of you that want to weigh in, please, all day long, Steelers, Cowboys. And the fact that they remain relevant, like this is a big game. For the Cowboys, they feel like they're reeling here early in the season. And sometimes they become like a laughingstock, and I don't think that's deserved. When you go 12-4, has it been three straight years of 12-4? Am I right about that? Can you fact check me there? I think it has. They're a very relevant team aside from legacy and brand. They're very relevant. Dak Prescott, he gets laughed at too. I'm not sure why. He's had some struggles in the playoffs. He also puts up giant numbers. He's a dangerous player, but they're wounded. They're injured. For the Steelers, it's obviously a big game. You know, you lose this one and then suddenly you have a streak going. I don't think they will. I think at night, at home, they're going to put together a big performance. It's also another career-defining game for Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, by the way. I don't know that we talk about this enough, Donnie. Like, careers go north and south really fast in the NFL, and they can depend on one performance. And I would argue that Fields going into this game can solidify himself as the starter with Russell Wilson creeping back toward health. Justin Fields goes out and lights it up against Dallas on a Sunday night and they win again. Not only does he seize the starting job for the time being, but I think he probably buys himself a bad game. Like, he's the starter then. He has a bad game or even a mediocre, or, you know, medium game and they lose. Then you have to start thinking about Russell Wilson, who I think is just delusional enough, maybe in a positive way, to believe that he's still the starter from the way he was talking yesterday, and he might be if Justin struggles. So there's a lot on the line team-wise and individual-wise in this game.
I think this is the big one when it comes to the quarterback situation. Just given the time of the year, like, okay, we're about a month into this thing, we're a month into this process. We have had the question every single week about Russell Wilson's health, a player who oddly was oh so close to playing in week one, has had very little improvement health-wise over the last month. And it's Sunday night football. It is against the Dallas Cowboys. It may not be number one. It will be one of the most watched games in the NFL this season.
For
I can
sure.
almost guarantee
sure.
that. And if Justin Fields goes out there and has a big performance, I don't care that Micah Parsons isn't playing. I don't care that DeMarcus Lawrence isn't playing. If he goes out there and has another big game, I think that is the stamp that he puts on the QB1.
And I think for the Steelers, they either announce themselves like, yeah, it is different this year. We're here to stay. You're going to be watching us all year type thing. Or coming off that Colts game, it's going to be like, wow, maybe those first three games were highly misleading. Maybe now that we see Kirk Cousins throwing for 500 yards, we think the Steelers got lucky to get him when they did. Bo Nix sucks. And the Chargers were banged. You know, you start thinking along those
Herbert
lines.
Herbert was banged up.
It's an announce yourself or not game for the Steelers. And yeah, the Cowboys, 12-5. Clearly what I meant, the last 3 years. So don't tell me that the Cowboys aren't relevant and dangerous. Having said that, I think that their run defense is really, really soft. And if I'm the Steelers, Donnie, I line up with Justin Fields as a major running threat this week. I line up like the 2019 Ravens, 20 Ravens, 21 Ravens with Greg Roman and a running quarterback and a bunch of running backs. I don't even care what their names are. Put the substitute teacher in there with Najee. What's his name? Who's the other guy?
Shamklin?
Yeah, put him in. Shamklin. If you block it right, Shamklin can be a star on Sunday night. Just run the hell out of it is what I'm saying.
Dallas has one of the worst run defenses in all of football, and the Steelers run the football more than pretty much any offense in the game. I mean, they only pass it like 46% of the time, which is one of the lowest rates in football. They like to go heavy. They like to load up with the tight ends, and they like to pound the football. This is a game to do that. So we can all get on Najee Harris, for instance, for 13 carries for 19 yards on Sunday. He can redeem himself in a big way. This should be an opportunity where he has a big game.
Yeah, and it looks like Warren and maybe Patterson won't play, right? Definitely. Warren's unimaginable at this point, right?
Yeah, correct.
And Patterson, it doesn't sound promising.
No, which he's been a nice little jolt to that run game.
So how about 20 nice carries for Mr. Justin Fields this week? 15 to 20 totes. What do you have in the opener this year? And you have 12, and he run 12 times?
About 10 times, yeah.
Yeah, how about 15? How about up it?
I'd give him a couple more design runs. It's something that they've not utilized over the last couple of weeks after doing it a lot week one.
Off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. We got a lot happening today. It's a Donnie Football Friday on the show. We have Ray Fittipaldo live from the South Side at the Steelers practice facility. We have Nick Kostos, who's just unbelievable on betting and also like game preview type stuff. Just really good at what he does. And we have Todd Archer from ESPN on the Cowboys, who have gotten off to a rather tumultuous start. But in the meantime, we're sort of steeped in the history of this thing, and we've been distracted this week with legitimate stories. Like, we're going to get back to Devontae Adams because there's been some developments in that story. But the bottom line is, this is an iconic type of matchup. Flagship NFL franchises. The star against the Steelers, and it goes way back. I think the second Super Bowl between these two teams, Donnie, 35-31 Steelers in the Orange Bowl, someone would have to show me, point me out a game that had more talent on the field than any football game played on American soil. There were 13 players, starters in that game, who went to the Hall of Fame. Not to mention probably 10 more who have a good case, not to mention both coaches, not to mention people sitting up in the executive suites. I could go on for an hour here too. Bill Nunn, people from all kinds of Rooneys, Tex Schramm, Gil Brandt. I could keep going here, right?
Oh, yeah.
The list just goes on and on and on. I think that game featured the most talent of any ever played, from top to bottom.
Yeah, you said American soil, and I immediately thought, Joe, I think it's the most talent that's been on any piece of soil in the entire world, the entire universe.
In any sport?
I don't know. Maybe you go back to some of those baseball games from like the Murderers Row Yankees era.
Or Olympic hockey games, basketball games, things like that. But for sure. For sure in football, I think.
Football, there's no question. And also, I didn't know this. Pro Football Reference actually has its top 100 games ranked. I don't know how they do it, like by their system. I don't know if it's just the people that work there.
Yeah.
So I dove into that. That game is ranked 17th.
What's one? Let me guess. The greatest games ever played?
That's number one, the 58 NFL Championship.
Alan Ameche's game. Giants and Colts, you're talking?
Yes.
Okay, that's one because of its significance, not because it was a great game necessarily, although it probably was. All right, then I'm going to guess number two, if we're going based on significance, is Joe Namath against the Colts?
No.
No? What's number two?
Number two is the catch, the 81 NFC Championship game, 49ers and Cowboys.
Holy horse oil. What's the highest rated Steeler game? That one or Cardinals-Steelers Super Bowl?
It is actually Cardinals-Steelers.
Where is it?
Number 12. And then the 72 AFC Championship, or AFC Divisional, the Immaculate Reception at number 13.
So the Steelers don't have a top 10 game in NFL history? What the hell is going on
not
here?
Not according
Limits?
To our friends at Pro Football Reference.
I'm going to text them and criticize them. Just quickly reel off the top. You name a game in the top 10, I'll tell you a memory I have. 58, I wasn't born yet. Number two, you said, is the catch. I remember it well. I hated the Niners, but I hated the Cowboys worse. Number three?
The Ice Bowl in 1967.
Wasn't born yet, but I talked to Tony Verna, the man who invented instant replay for CBS, the man who invented it. I did a huge story on the 50th anniversary of instant replay and the famous shot from behind the line of Bart Starr going across the line for the winning touchdown. was only captured because the cameraman, his camera froze in the end zone. He was supposed to be wide. His job was go wide and look at what's happening outside, you know, the line, if there's going to be a throw. His camera froze, and that's why you got that iconic shot. Next.
The epic in Miami, the 81 AFC Divisional.
The Kellen Winslow game.
Yep.
That the Dolphins did. The Chargers won in the end, right? I remember the hook and lateral from the Dolphins in that game.
Yeah, Chargers 41-38.
It was in Crinkulent. And then Kellen Winslow, you know, getting helped off the field. Yes, I remember that one. Tony Nathan was underrated. Next.
Number 5, Super Bowl 42, Giants and Patriots.
Watching it and loving it and hating on Belichick after the game. Next.
The game-winning touchdown in that game.
Plex.
Yep. And the David Tyree helmet catch. There's the guarantee, Joe Namath, Super Bowl III.
You can't deny the significance of it, but the significance for the Steelers is that the very next morning at a hotel in Miami, Dan Rooney met with one Chuck Knoll, who, even though he had sustained this crushing defeat the night before, had an encyclopedic knowledge of the Steelers and everything about the Steelers, and he mapped out their future that morning. And Dan Rooney had no doubt who his guy was. Next.
Number 7, you'll like this one, Joe. The 1992 AFC Wild Card game, the Bills and the Oilers.
I started the game at my girlfriend's apartment on South Aiken in Shadyside. Marlene, she had been my girlfriend from Buffalo. She moved to Pittsburgh to follow me, much to her chagrin later on, but that's beside the point. I left angry in the first half, livid, and walked to my apartment on Fifth Avenue, where I pulled out a red little TV table made of metal and started eating cantaloupe and drinking water. And then the comeback happened, and it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And afterward, I walked up and down the streets of Shadyside with one finger in the air. Not my middle finger either. And for every game after that year, well, there were only 3, I drank water and ate cantaloupe. Next.
Number 8, Super Bowl 49, Seahawks and Patriots.
Unbelievable game and the stupidest call in NFL history at the end. Next.
Super Bowl 51, the Falcons and the Patriots.
Falcons, Patriots, I remember. Tom Brady looking up from the turf as an interception return, a pick 6, I think made it 28-3. And then I remember the fabled Kyle Shanahan kept calling pass plays, keeping time on the clock when he should have been running it. And then Brady led the comeback, and I hated them and Belichick. Is that the top 10?
Well, there is one more.
Yes.
Number 10, the final one, and my apologies for this one, Joe, can be described by 2 words. Wide right.
God. Oh, God. I'm shaking now. Here's what makes me angry about that game. Is that Belichick's defensive game plan is in the Hall of Fame. What the hell did he do? The Giants held the ball for 41 minutes. The Bills had it for 19 minutes and scored. They were a point a minute. They scored 17 on offense in that game in 19 minutes. What did Belichick's defensive game plan have to do with anything? The offensive game plan should be in the Hall of Fame. They gave it to O.J. Anderson every single play. Whitney Houston had the greatest national anthem of all time. And then Norwood kicks wide right. And in warm-ups, and it's unbelievable in this 30 for 30 on the Bills, they show the warm-ups where Norwood's kicks were perfect. They started out a little right, and he was hooking them in because of the conditions and everything else. It was perfect. Frank Reich, when Norwood struck the ball, Frank Reich, the holder, and Norwood both said, that's in, because it's just like warm-ups. And the damn thing stayed to the right. And I'm like Bruce Smith, who in that same 30 for 30 is sitting on a couch with Thurman Thomas watching the game and analyzing it. And Bruce Smith says at the end, every time I see that damn kick, I think it's going through. So do I, and I'm tortured forever. Donnie, it's wonderful to have you here.
I'm pumped, Joe. I think that was a pretty electric first 30-plus minutes.
I loved it. Yeah. Get used to the long segments, big boy.